We're back. Another episode of Dynasty Theory. What's going on, Dan? Are you on mute? Dan is on mute to start the episode.
No.
Hey, look, boys, we're off to a hot start.
Man, my bad. I put it on during the intermission there, but it's rookie season, man. I'm glad to be here. Like, I'm already buying rookie football cards, getting ready for the new rookies. And I got a, you know, sorry, JB. My best card was a defensive player autographed rookie. It's kind of cool, but it's defense. I don't think that counts in your books.
No, I'm not interested. Mitch, what's going on, buddy?
I'm happy. Like, after, by the time we record next week, I'll be in a much better mood than I am now. Because these 2 weeks are the worst part when you have a lot of leagues, because you have so many rookie drafts. You're doing everything you can to not time out. There's a lot of times where I've been offered trades, and I don't even see them because I'm just too busy picking. And someone's like, hey, I sent you an offer. I'm like, yeah, that was 2 hours ago when I made that pick. That was my bet.
Yeah, it's a constant battle when you're in so many leagues, right? Because you don't want to time out. You want to be punctual. And it's not just like if you want to take some time on the clock, sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I know if I don't pick right away, I'm going to forget about that pick. I'm going to forget that I'm on the clock, and it's going to be even worse for me this week. I think I have 40 rookie drafts starting tomorrow. The first wave we're wrapping up. So we have a lot of good data. We have a lot of good information discussing maybe some reaches, some values, some trends that we've seen. I have this in the Dynasty Theory tiers on the Dynasty Theory Patreon. But I'm tracking right now 25 drafts. Yeah.
I got to call a timeout for an over-under, John. So, you know, I'm resonating with Mitch and talk about his juggling of the leagues, and you're trying to keep up with all the picks. And, you know, I don't have as many as you guys, but it gets busy, especially during a work day. Mm-hmm. Now, you just said you have how many drafts starting tomorrow? Now, I believe you're working tomorrow. Or did you take a paid holiday? I'm curious.
No, I'll be working. But
define working, like the over under of work production for you tomorrow.
It's been busy. It's been busy over at the actual work HQ. So I've been having to actually, you know, do some things.
I got king of multitasking, John Bauer.
But no, that's the thing. So like, you get the alert, you're on the clock. I'm not going to sit there like if you send an offer quickly, fine. But like, that's the downfall to having so many leagues. Whereas if you're just in a few, you sit there, you negotiate, you max out on value. That's one of the biggest cons and issues that I've come across. And I know we've talked about this previously, and you know, Mitch, obviously, and Dan, you're in the same boat. So, you know, it's difficult. It gets tough. All right. Well, now let's talk about these 25 drafts. I sent you guys the data. Okay.
How about the 24 drafts?
No. The 25.
I'm sorry. Heaven forbid. You know, I throw a joke out there. Just doesn't hit. My bad.
Listen, you know, when the spreadsheets are involved, I'm not in a joking mood.
I learned that last week, believe me.
His game face is on.
You kept repeating that over and over to me.
Well, I mean, listen, I co-manage a few leagues with Mitch, and for some reason, he thinks it's acceptable to go golf, to spend time with his family, mm-hmm. to be a good dad. We don't have time for this. So I'm sitting there pinging him. I mean, granted, some of those were like 5 a.m. your time.
Yes.
You weren't quite even awake. But I don't have time to sit there in dilly-dally. So I even gave you the benefit of the doubt, and I caved. I looked at Mitch's tiers, and I said, okay, we'll go with this guy. But for the most part, I was okay with the pick, too. So
and John's speaking in half-truths here. Like we know John's a good dad and a good husband and all that, but you know Mrs. Bauer's got to have those pep talks with him from time to time about being watered down and priorities, you know?
I was trying to explain to her actually what we just talked about with, she was like, so how's your fantasy stuff going? I was like, well, you know, I have all these leagues going on and it kind of a disadvantage because I'm not able to maximize value. Like literally what we just talked about. And she's like, why'd I ask? Okay. All right. So like I said, we are here to give folks a general idea of where guys are going across the board. And the data that I have, it's, you know, there's some 12 team leagues, 14, 16 team leagues, some where you have to start two tight ends, somewhere it's start three wide receivers, some start two, some 1.5 PPR, some two PPR, point per carry league. So there's a lot of data here, but I think overall, because there's so many leagues, it does normalize and it does give you a pretty good idea. So in the sheet, I have the total count that they've been drafted in, their average draft position, the median, the earliest, the latest they've gone, the overall range. So we'll talk about those players that have an extremely wide variance, you know, a high variance from league to league. And those are the players, I think, that you either can get a great value on or you might have to reach on depending on the league dynamic and how your league mates see everything.
JB, I think it has an advantage too. Like, sounds like you guys definitely got a big jump in the past week. I got a small jump in the past week with leagues that already started. We have some other leagues that are kicking off this week for whatever reason late, but the safe leagues always start later. So I think for our owners that are still in those safe leagues, like, that's an advantage. And I've had a lot of success in the safe leagues, I think, because of all these leagues that we're in, getting this jump start on drafts. Because a lot of those safe league owners are only safe league owners, and they're behind that rookie study in there.
And I commish, what is it, 7 of the Dynasty Theory leagues on Sleeper. I had all of them kind of lining up with the safe leagues timeline, and they all start tomorrow as well. I know Mitch for his commish leagues, like, they're all done already.
Yeah, every single one of them's done.
Commission like of Empire, the year, man. Champions, he's on the ball.
Beer, all of them. So, but again, those are kind of where you take your lumps and you kind of see, okay, I have to trade up here if I want to get this certain guy. So can I just give some data if it's okay with you guys? You know, like, I woke up early today. I was super excited to talk today. Clearly, based on my word count, as Dan will call it here shortly. But if I could share a little bit of data.
Please.
I suppose.
All right. So across these 25 drafts, there have been 17 different players taken in the top 12. So essentially a round and a half of players finding their way into that first round of rookie drafts. 31 different players taken in the top 24, 50 different players taken in the top 36. So we are seeing that variance, and that you're going to see later, there's players, their range is 20 some picks one way or the other. So it's pretty crazy the swings that we've seen. 8 players have been taken in the top 10 picks in all 25 drafts. So Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Drake May, Brock Bowers, JJ McCarthy, Rome Odunze, none of them have slipped out of the top 10. Okay. And every one of these is at least a super flex league. And for the most part, there is some type of tight end premium. Caleb and Marvin, they've gone by pick 3 every draft. That's not a surprise. Drake May, JJ McCarthy, and Rome Odunze have slipped to 9 at least once. Brian Thomas, Bo Nix, and Keon Coleman were the 3 guys to bump them down. So at least in one draft, Brian Thomas, Bo Nix, Keon Coleman went in the top 8, which, I mean, has to be seen. And I'm a big Brian Thomas guy based on his price. He's my most rostered rookie at 6 shares so far. And, you know, it's because he's going and he's falling to 15 at the latest, which, I mean, I think is crazy. But anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. Does any of that data surprise you guys up to this point based off of what you've seen in your drafts? Because these are only the leagues that I'm in. So there's drafts that you two gentlemen are in that I don't have the data incorporated. So I'm interested to see if it, you know, varies at all. Mitch?
Honestly, no, we knew these top 8 coming in, and they've pretty much been the top 8 coming in. And then it's just really the big mover, I think, is how people view Bo Nix in the league. If there's someone who's willing to take him at the 109, 110, then you'll see Brian Thomas and Worthy fall. If nobody really likes him, he ends up going early 2nd, then it's kind of stock from all the rookie mock drafts we had before the draft even started.
Dan?
Agreed, man. Yeah, you summarized that very well, JB. And I think it's just, you know, those little slippages here and there. You get the aggressive Bok Browers owner. You get maybe an aggressive Xavier Worthy owner here a little bit. You know, I like to see if Brian Thomas sometimes in certain drafts slips a little bit, but nothing drastic, man. You hit the nail on the head.
Now, let me open this up a little bit. So, Mitch, the big thing that we see in the Discord is trying to figure out. So like I have my rookie tiers. I have my cross positional tiers. They're all essentially calibrated to 12 teams, super flex, start two running backs, start three receivers, two PPR for tight ends. You just have to start one, and plus six, minus four scoring for quarterbacks. What are your thoughts on Brock Bowers, where he should be going? And let's break it up. Start two tight end league with a scoring premium. Start two tight end, no scoring premium. Start one, two PPR, 1.7, 1.5, and then no tight end premium. I want you to run through all of those.
All of those? Okay. Well, I'm going to make it quick. So the two tight end leagues, I don't really care what the scoring is. I'm going to value them the same because it's so hard to move tight ends in those leagues. So for me, he would be about the 103. If you're talking about the 2-point premium leagues that a lot of us are in, probably 105, 106. And then 1.75 and 1.5, I probably a little bit of a varying difference there. But I don't have a lot of Brock Bowers because I am in a few of those leagues. But a lot of those leagues, I'm very happy with my tight end situation. So I'm honestly hammering the quarterbacks in there. I might have one or two shares of Brock, but that's it. And I've probably had easily 25 drafts by now.
Well, the big issue too is, and I was going through dynastydaddy.com. Of course, I say it every episode. I am legitimately on that site constantly throughout every single day. I might as well make it my homepage, and I'm not even kidding about that. But you go through the trade database. Over the last week, there have been a lot more trades involving like 106, 107, 108. Than 111, 112, but the volume might be higher, but there's a drastic price discrepancy. So I'm looking at my shares of the guys. I have Caleb Williams. I have four shares. He's my only guy in the top eight that I have at least four shares of. And a lot of that comes down to if you don't have the pick already, it's very challenging to get somebody to move off of that pick that has held it up to this point at a even remotely reasonable price or what I would consider market value.
Agreed. And you got the largest sample size to draw from of the three of us, JB.
Oh. And listen, it's not the size of the sample size that matters, right? Now, that was a good joke. That was a good joke.
I do think what you find in these first rounds, so I've had probably 25 like what John has, right? John like keeps track of everything. Obviously, that's why we have a spreadsheet on like the median and all these other fancy words and stuff, right? I didn't know my rookie allocation at all until last night when I was preparing for the show. I went and loaded it up on Dynasty Daddy. And what really shocked me is I thought I was going to have a lot more of May. I actually have more Caleb than I have of May. I only have one Jaden. That's because we took him for John. But like you end up really stuck on, I think, these first round guys. I don't have a huge allocation of like, I don't have a lot of Rome and Brian Thomas and Worthy and Adunze, you know, and I already said Adunze twice, but I don't have a lot of them, but I have a lot of Xavier Worthy. I have a lot of Trey Benson and I have very little Jonathan Brooks. For whatever reason, it always seems to work out that way for me to where I have really high rostership of certain players and hardly any of anybody else.
You talk about this every year. You like to be overweight, you know, and there are certain players that if they hit then, I mean, but ultimately, like we're talking about Trey Benson, you know, like 203, 204 range,
yeah.
Like, sure, you could say it's a gamble, but there's plenty of opportunity there for him to see a little spike in value. You talked about, you know, having like the 101, and obviously you get Caleb Williams. Dan, let me ask you, is there a situation with the way you're like, and maybe Dan isn't the right person to ask, and I only say that because... The only reason I say that is because this question is geared towards a comment I just saw in the chat from Greg about maybe having multiple first round picks. Dan, how many leagues do you have multiple first round picks?
It's not fair.
Be honest.
I don't think I have any.
Okay. So my question was, and I'll open this up to both of you. And I caught myself. And that's why I said Dan might not be the guy. But let's say you have like 102 and 104 or 105 and 107. Like, have you seen situations for yourselves where maybe you pass on a player that you would have normally taken with that first pick, but it's because you have that additional leverage and flexibility with that second pick that maybe is like just two or three back?
I'm always roster dependent, you know? So, I mean, I don't have enough scenarios, so I probably am not your right guy, JB, but I could see the scenario where I will go off of my board to better suit my roster or knowing my league mates. There's a lot of, you know, strategy that goes behind that, Mr. Bauer.
Yeah, so definitely. I had one league to where I had 4 out of 5 picks in the very late first. Worthy was on the board, Bekanke was on the board. Both running backs were on the board, and Bo Nix was on the board. I wanted Bo Nix, but I had a very good feeling that he wouldn't get picked, right? So I was willing to miss out on one of the running backs. So I just went Worthy and Bekanke, I think. And then I'm pretty sure Brooks went, and then I just got Nix and Benson right after that. I think it's all like Dan said, though. It's like playing your opponents. You have to have a decent idea on if you do have those picks, what that next person's going to do. Because if you're in a situation like Greg brought up to where he's in a 2 tight end league, he wanted Brock at the 102, and he was okay with losing out on Marvin Harrison if you went at the 103 to get Daniels at the 104. You have to be okay with that. But if there's a situation to where you really want Daniels and that person at 103 doesn't have a good quarterback situation, you're like, well, maybe I actually go Daniels here and hope he doesn't take Bowers and he just takes May or something like that in that position.
And there is, you both talked about it, league dependent, knowing your league mates. There certainly is a psychological aspect here, because even though we're largely talking about drafting for value, trading for need, as it always comes up, if you're in a league that's not super active, sometimes that can be challenging. And we're all in leagues like that, right? Where you're going to sit there, the team you have is the team you have, and it's going to be challenging to upgrade through maneuvers over the rest of the offseason, early stages of the regular season. But, you know, I think this is where the tier-based drafting it comes into play. You know, yes, I've broken up my tiers for the rookies, at least, into actual rankings within the tiers. But I've moved away from that in certain leagues just because maybe it's on Sleeper, or maybe it's on MFL, where the ADPs can be very different when you get to those mid to late rounds. So I see that one of my guys is buried in the ADP. I feel good about passing on him, even though I have him ranked over a certain player, but I have 5 or 6. I have a pick again in 5 or 6 spots. I see Ollie saying exactly the league and team we were chatting about yesterday, where it's extremely difficult to get trades done. You know, knowing your league mates, I don't think that could be stressed enough.
And JB, I think this rookie draft, unlike any we've experienced in the last 4 years, allows you more opportunities to go in different directions based on everything we're just talking about. You know, I might love Rome or Brian Thomas more than Nix, but there's so many receivers in this draft. I could gobble up that extra quarterback because of my league structure, because of my needs, because I know teams in my leagues need quarterbacks, and still with extra picks, get some receivers later on and be just fine. So you got a lot of options between the quarterback and wide receiver position to maybe go off our boards.
That's really big, because in normal years, you don't see what could be a team's wide receiver one going off in the second round. Right now, whether you like Keon Coleman or not, that's what some people think he can be. I'm a huge Jalen Polk guy, so I love getting May and Polk in leagues. And you're getting Polk at the back end of the second round. Roman Wilson could go in, and he could get a lot more catches than Pickens. I couldn't think of his name for a second. But there's guys in the second round now to where you could talk yourself into them. And then so you could be like, you know what? I can get Bo Nix here over Worthy, because who knows how many catches Worthy's really going to have. And in the back end of the second half, I could get Roman Wilson, who could get, you know, 65 catches this year.
And there's still Ricky Pearsall, and there's still AD Mitchell, you know, Mitch, like there's so many options where you can land with a solid wide receiver in the second round. We'd even say McConkey, depending on where he goes, late first, early second.
Right now we have, he wasn't technically a first rounder, but Keon Coleman, he's going at 204. He was the 33rd pick to the Buffalo Bills. Ricky Pearsall, he went in the first round. He's 205. Xavier Leggett, he went in the first round. He's 207. And I see a lot of chatter and a lot of discussions, especially on Twitter, where their profiles are being picked apart. And I agree, there are concerns there, but that's why their first round wide receiver is going in the middle of the second. So yes, like Xavier Leggett is actually one of my most rostered players. If you would have told me that post NFL draft, pre NFL draft, I would have said you were bat crazy. But here we, I edited myself, Dan. There you go. I gave myself the bleep. But like here we are. Like there is upside with minimal risk based on where these guys are going. So we talk about potential landmines in each rookie draft or startups or potential trade targets. You know, it's tough to look at a guy going middle, late second and say, oh man, that's a landmine there. It's a low risk, high upside pick. And, you know, so I just think expectations should be tempered. Like I'm not sitting there with these Xavier Leggett shares like, oh my God, my wide receiver problems are fixed on my dynasty teams. I got Xavier Leggett. Like oh my God, I'm good to go. I got Roman Wilson. I'm good. There's a reason these guys are going where they're going. And it's okay to roster them, even though I'm a very analytically sided person when it comes to the rookie evaluations. There's still things to like about these guys. Can you ding them for a lot of things? Yes, but that's why they're going this late.
JB, I got to bring attention to the chat. I think this might be an all-time Dynasty Theory first. Mitch, I'm not mistaken. This is your boy here, right?
That's my oldest.
Yeah. Dad, mom said you're in trouble. So, JB, like, we might have to go, like, 2 hours on the show so Mitch doesn't have to go to the doghouse after. I'm not sure.
That might make it worse. Who knows?
Yeah. I have no idea what I did, but I'm sure I did something wrong.
Oh, man.
Story.
Probably took you too long to respond in your co-managed leagues with your wife.
Probably you wanted to take. Did. Maybe I left her on red, too.
Probably. Wait, you read my messages and
I would
them?
Never do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mitch is all in right. Every doghouse now.
All right. So Dan, how do you view these quarterbacks? So let's ignore Caleb, because even people that are not absolutely in love with him, I think he's still going 101 for them. So we're talking about Jaden Daniels, Drake May, JJ McCarthy, that tier. There's been a little bit of variance there. So Jaden Daniels, he has gone between 102 and 106 in all of these drafts. Drake May has gone between 102 and 109 in all of these drafts. JJ McCarthy, he's gone as early as 104, and he's dropped to 109 in all of these drafts. So we've seen these orders flipped and flopped and sideways, upside down. How do you view these three?
Man, you know I have that super flex bias because that's like every league we play in. So I find it very hard to let any of those quarterbacks slide. You mentioned two of them going to 109 in a couple drafts. I'd be really interested to see their like formats and why they went that late. But I love them all. I'd be so confident having either of them as a starting quarterback and an upgrade on, you know, some of our dynasty rosters that are a little weak at that second quarterback position. You know, Jaden Daniels with his scrambling ability, like he to me is just the no-brainer number two there. I just think he has a great opportunity. But May and McCarthy, you could flip-flop them, don't matter. I wouldn't let either of them slide past 107 maybe.
So Drake May, he went 109 in a 12-team super flex, half PPR, no tight end premium. And I think the reason he went to 109 is because it was plus four, minus two. But still, in a no tight end premium, well, actually, Brock went 1-10 there. So
Well, wide receiver crazy.
A lot of bad drafters. That's all I got to say.
So that was the 109 for Drake May. For JJ McCarthy, 12-team super flex, 2 PPR for tight ends, plus 6, minus 4 quarterback scoring. And Xavier Worthy went ahead of JJ McCarthy.
That's crazy. Because I really do think JJ McCarthy is going to be able to sling it in the National Football League. You know, I think he's played to that Michigan system, but he used to sling it in high school. And you got a coordinator there in Minnesota that's made, like, Dobbs was able to sling it. Backup quarterbacks was able to sling it. Put up really good fantasy production. So I hope that wouldn't scare fantasy owners away.
Mitch, the million-dollar question with these quarterbacks. I think, Dan, I like the breakdown there on that tier. Bo Nix and Michael Penix. Where are you comfortable taking these guys? Let's assume it, like, you have one pick in this range and you can't trade it. Yep. You can't move up, can't trade back, can't trade out. Where is the earliest you're taking Bo Nix or Michael Penix? Let's say 12-team super flex, 2 PPR tight ends, plus 6, minus 4 scoring. So plus 6 for a passing touchdown, minus 4 for interceptions.
You know, I just want to thank the NFL for giving us so much content during the draft show, because this was a lot of our talks towards the end of the first round when we were live last week. It's for Bo Nix, for me, it's really easy. It's 109. I'm willing to take him at the 109 if I need quarterback help there. Sean Payton decided that's his quarterback. And whether you believe Drew Brees made Sean Payton, maybe they both, you know, did well together, vice versa, however you want to look at it, we have a Hall of Fame coach saying, hey, I want that quarterback. That quarterback's going to lead my team at the 112. And then he went on the press conference asking, oh, I made the Vikings trade up over us.
I saw that.
You know, that's whatever. But I'm looking at it, this is a Hall of Fame head coach who wants this quarterback. This isn't a new franchise wanting to get a new signal caller who is going to lead the way. This is an established head coach saying, that's my guy. So for me, I'm willing to spend up a little bit to get Bo Nix. Now, Michael Penix, on the other hand, I'm not going to have him in any league unless I have a 16-team league. I will get him there with the hope someone will trade up for him, right? But for me, he's a 208, 209, 210. Someone will take him before me.
He is one of my most rostered players at this point.
There is no doubt in my mind.
I'm looking at my list. So Brian Thomas, I have 6 shares. Will Shipley, 6. Kamani Vidal, 5. Caleb, 4. Trey Benson, 4. Michael Penix, Xavier Leggett, Roman Wilson, Cade Stover, all with 4. Like, the production profile for Roman Wilson, the late breakout for Xavier Leggett, Michael Penix being what we see as a more pocket passer sitting behind Kirk Cousins now for how many years? I would have said you were absolutely crazy, but here we are again. I say, here we are.
2 questions to both of Mitch's points. I want to turn it over to you, JB. So the Bo Nix one, I consider, we talked about earlier where you move off your board a little bit. Like, I have Brian Thomas, ranked before him. Some people might like Xavier Worthy, but that super flex quarterback need, I'm with you, Mitch. I would take Nix before him every time, even though he doesn't necessarily rank higher in my rookie rankings. The Penix one, JB, I compare him right now to 2026 first, because that's when I think he's going to come out. I think it's Cousins.
That's super fair.
2 years. So like, in your 4 shares, like, where does that kind of land? Like, I don't want him in any of my drafts, because you know how I don't like future picks, and I trade future picks. And, like, to me, you want my only reason I won't trade you my 2026 first is because I don't want to pay for 2026. But I think I already had one league that I broke down and I traded my 2nd and my 4th in 2026, because it was just such good value for me. But, like, wouldn't you rather a rookie, JB, than a 2026 first with all the depth that you could have? Like, I would rather get my boy Marshawn Lloyd late in the 2nd, then I don't know. I just don't want Penix.
All right.
I want to wait till 2026.
So I got him at 205. If we're talking about the value of, like, 24 seconds and where they should be compared to 25 first, 26 first.
Yeah.
I'll take a 26 first over 205. I'll take a 26 first over 206. So I don't disagree with you, but it doesn't matter for the most part.
On a competing roster?
I mean, again, like, It's May 5th. It's Cinco de Mayo. We have time. I'm going to, for the most part, draft on value. But again, on a competing roster, what names are you taking over him? Assuming we can't get out of this pick, what names are you taking for a guy that you think is going to help your competing roster in year one?
So here's
Michael Penix is going to have that insulated value.
Michael Penix is going to be 27 by the time he starts. He already has two ACL injuries. Even if, let's say,
his knees are going to be in tip-top shape. Think about science and what they're going to be able to do by the time Michael Penix starts a game.
He might make some tricks to turkey. I get it. My problem is, let's say this works out perfectly for the Falcons. Kirk Cousins takes him to two Super Bowls. After that, Kirk Cousins wants to move on, whatever. Michael Penix is the starter then. Michael Penix probably isn't going to give me in 2 years what I want from my fantasy quarterback. He is a pocket passer who's going to be an older pocket passer. At best, he would be viewed as Jared Goff. At best. Jared Goff has never had real value. Kirk Cousins has never had real value.
No argument.
Yeah, and so that's the reason why I'm willing. I will take Mitchell over him. I will take Polk over him. I'll take Roman Wilson over him.
I think he'll eventually have value, Mitch. I just don't have the patience to wait for it.
That's exactly my point, though, is because in 26, I guarantee there's going to be another quarterback who's coming out in the draft who is a lot more mobile than he is, and I could get him at the 107, and I will draft him there than having to wait for a guy like Michael Penix.
Like, I was hoping JB would teach me a lesson in patience and say, hey, it is worth waiting for. Maybe it is. Maybe we're impatient, Mitch. I don't know, at that quarterback position, but those guys in the second round that really do have some strong upside in this deep draft, I don't want to trade out of that. Mm-hmm.
The range of outcomes over the next 2 years from a value perspective is so broad. It's so wide for a Leggett, a Polk, a Coleman, a Mitchell, a Pearsall, a Burton, Sinnott, whoever you want to look at, Roman Wilson. But the risk is far more, again, from the value swing. Michael Penix, for the foreseeable future, he is a boring pick. But we're talking about him, guys, in the middle of the second. I'm not saying go get him in the first round, where some people have taken him. He's gone as early as 10, which is madness. He's gone as late as pick 22. But I'm talking about him 204, 5, 6, 7. I'm going to scoop him up every single time. Every time.
I will say, Mitch, am I – quarterback needy rosters where my quarterback two might be Derek Carr or Danny Dimes, and I don't have a draft pick next year or something. Maybe where Mitch or JB is saying in the middle of the second, I will break down and take
even that. If you have Trey Lance as your quarterback too, he has an equal chance of starting right now that Michael Penix has. He really does, though.
That's a good one.
Wes brings out a good point here that I want to point out. You also have to consider league health in the Penix equation. How many leagues are even still going in 3 years?
That's a strong point.
But again, are you getting immediate production from any of these guys going in that Michael Penix range? I don't think the answer is receiver one. Oh my. Now let me ask you guys. So obviously Michael Penix is the most divisive of the quarterbacks that we're discussing here, at least among the three of us.
Should be Jaden Daniels, but keep going. Sorry.
Let's say, your wide receivers are stacked. Let's say you feel great about them. You wouldn't rather take Penix from a value perspective
Marshawn Lloyd, the next Barry Sanders, is sitting out there.
And he's going to give you production necessarily over the first 2 years of his career? That's different.
I could trade and maneuver in that second round and do some things.
No. There's no trading in this league.
Oh, that's right. You're not allowing me to trade and maneuver again. You're handcuffing me here.
Okay. But seriously, we would spend the 205 on him, right? Let's say we're spending the 205 on Penix. In 2 years, he's the starter. He is going to cost the 2026 110, 111. I will use the 110 or 111 at that point if I really like Penix. That's how I look at it. If I think Penix is going to be good in 2 years, I'll go out and buy him then. Right now, he's going to be a rookie quarterback going into that situation to where he won't be the starter. Say Kirk Cousins goes out and gets injured week three. I could go out and spend just a little bit more and still get Michael Penix. with the
25 first.
I'm not going to.
You're going to be wishing you could get a 26 first for Jalen Polk plus Roman Wilson plus Jalen Wright.
When they helped me win a championship, John, in how many months do we have now? 7 months from now, Dynasty Championship Week is going to happen. Jalen Polk is going to lead me to the promised land.
We see who Mitch is high on here. All right.
And I'm not, I have a lot of Jalen Polk. I'm not anti-Jalen Polk at all. Like, he's going at 210 right now. His range is pick 204 to 306.
You could get him in the third round a lot. Yeah.
To 306. And I have him in the 205 tier. Like, like, I'm not arguing. I have Michael Penix in that 203 area. That's where I have him. And in a lot of these cases that I have him, I would be very surprised if I have him on my roster in 4 years.
Yeah, me too. Me too. As John says, we might almost all be dead in 4 years. So
I was looking at four shares. If I have him on my roster in 1 year, I'm not going to have anybody on my roster in 4 years. The turnover, come on.
Oh. Your tier is fair, JB.
Bill says, I love that there is a different way to play. I love that there is different ways to play any particular situation. No. It has to be my way.
Yeah.
Right? As I go through some of my rosters and I'm like, who put this team together?
All right, I want to ask both of you a question. Troy Franklin kind of has the biggest range of wide receiver, right? Because you could see how people could talk themselves into it. It's like, hey, he's getting paired with his college quarterback. He went in the early fourth. So it's, you know, what's really the difference between a late third and early fourth? He's going with his college quarterback. There's really not a lot of, besides Cortland Sutton, there's not a lot of target competition around him. Where are you guys willing to take him?
Oh, so he, let me just give the range here for everybody. He's going, he went pick 13 in one draft, and he's gone down to pick 30. So his range is 17 spots. Like you said, Mitch, one of the higher ones for wide receivers. I personally am more in that early third range. So needless to say, I think I have maybe one or two shares of Troy Franklin. You know, he went in the early fourth. He has the production profile. He is obviously the next Amon-Ra St. Brown. I say that in jest, just to make sure we're all aware.
I know.
But when I look at my pre-draft scores on my rookie sheets, and I look at the top two scores since 2017 that went in the fourth round, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown and Troy Franklin. Am I saying he's Amon-Ra St. Brown? No. But overall, I would say Troy Franklin is being overdrafted, just to be very clear.
Yeah. And I'm on the underdrafted side. I have a middle of the third round. I would much rather get the guy I've been getting the most of, and that's Luke McCaffrey. You know, I love those next gen guys, man. And if he works as hard as CMC and catches as good as his dad, and his conversion from quarterback to receiver was so smooth, I think he's also in a really good situation in Washington there where he could produce right away. I like McCaffrey, but yeah, middle for Troy there, man. It's so polarizing, the different opinions on Troy Franklin, Mitch. Like, there are, and I'm trying to go like what I saw on film, and I kind of liked him a bit on film. Like, he stacked receivers decent. He had some yards after the catch, but there's some warts in his games too. So if he falls to me, I wouldn't be mad, but it's middle of the third for me.
And I don't want to keep going back to the Michael Penix conversation.
Yes, you do.
There's another good comment here from Thomas. What about finding that Penix owner that becomes impatient and getting that discount? Sure. Listen, if you draft Michael Penix, my expectation is that he would not see the field until 2026. I think that's a fair expectation. But again, like, I think he's going to be a more liquid asset over the next year and a half, 2 years, than some of the receivers going this range. But anyway, let's move on from Michael Penix. More than happy to have any additional conversations.
It's all the fault of the Atlanta Falcons. I said to you, JB, man, they screwed everything up, man. In real life and in fantasy, what they've done to dynasty owners by taking Penix, because I actually did like him pre-draft. He should have went to the Raiders, and then Bowers would have went somewhere else, and we'd even have more choices in our very deep draft this year. I'm still salty.
All right,
I have someone else. Kind of the biggest shocking person for me, kind of where I've seen their range go, is Jatavion Sanders. It's like people are acting like he went to this bad landing spot. He went to a really good landing spot. Yes, he went around after what we originally thought, but that's it. I don't really
understand. I mean, the expectation was he was going second round of the NFL draft. Was that not the expectation?
Yeah, he went third, right?
He went in the fourth.
Fourth. Well, it was early 401, 402, right?
It was 401.
Early fourth, great situation, Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, but now he's going from what, the late second to, I got him in the fourth round in a league yesterday in a tight end premium. And I mean, people, I'm just going to say this name. I know, John, you have a lot of shares, but I'm just going to say it because I think his value is there. You're going to be able to move off of him. But Vidal, right? Vidal is a running back to where I didn't even know who he was before the draft started, right? He all of a sudden goes to the Chargers. Now all of a sudden, hey, he's worth the 305. And it's like, is he really worth the 305? Are we doing it solely based off that landing spot, hoping that Gus Edwards, who is a very competent running back, is somehow going to break down? J.K. Dobbins will break down, but you know, the hope is that he doesn't. And I just think it's kind of funny to how we can hype up one player up to almost the same value as we're willing to drop someone else down to where I think Jatavion Sanders got just as good of a landing spot as Kimani Vidal did. But I know the running backs should gain value. It's just, I think Jatavion Sanders could be a huge value in the draft right now.
I agree, man. I agree. And I think sometimes with these draft landing spots where I watch these rookie drafts, guys like Vidal that you mentioned, Mitch, are going up and it just gets too rich for me. And I wasn't really like stoked on his film. Like, he wasn't one of those guys that I'm like, oh, he's a sleeper. I'm targeting him in these, you know, later rookie rounds. If he falls to me, great. I wouldn't not take him. But mid third, no thank you. All these tight end premium leagues we're talking about. So Sinnott gets this big jump. He now becomes a round two rookie guy. Love that. Agree. I won't argue with you, even though I had Sanders before him in the film. But I'm willing to let one of you guys take Sinnott, be happy in the second round. Let Sanders fall to me in the third. And I am stoked because I think he could be as good or better. So I think that's where you find some value in these drafts, man. There's like round two is a great plan B round where you could still get the receiver you want. Round three, you can land still some receivers and a tight end like Sanders and be in great shape.
When we're talking about those two tight ends, Ben Sinnott, going right around 209. Jatavion Sanders, 305. You know, there is a noticeable gap there. I think both are fine values there. Now we're seeing, like, I think a mistake people are making, and Gordon in the Discord, he always shares like two tight end leagues where you also get like 1.75 PPR. Mm-hmm. Like, Ben Sinnott's going first round. I know the format. I know the format and the premium. Like, it is, it really juices up the tight ends, but I can't be taking him there.
Nope, not at all.
Like, I understand the thought, but I certainly think it's a little misguided. So looking at the largest range of outcomes here, and I want to go back a little bit here. So we'll go to first round. Bo Nix, there's a 10-pick gap. Xavier Worthy, 8-pick gap. Drake May, 7. Brock Bowers, 7. I think Bo Nix and Xavier Worthy, that certainly makes sense. You know, I think people are going to view them very differently. Drake May and Brock Bowers. I think the Brock Bowers 7-pick gap is because we have a couple leagues that are too tight end with a scoring premium and a couple that are non-premium. So I think we can ignore that one from the data I have. The Drake May 7 spots, I don't think there's that's too wide for him. And I think we kind of talked about that earlier. Now, these are guys that have the second round. So guys that have seen second round draft capital in the rookie drafts, this is their largest range of outcomes with, you know, these guys. Roman Wilson, 20 spots. Ben Sinnott, 16. Polk, 14. Penix, 12. Keon Coleman, Ricky Pearsall, Blake Corum, 10. Dan, Ricky Pearsall, first-round NFL wide receiver. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be discounted because of that crowded situation in San Francisco. How are you looking at that situation and Ricky Pearsall?
Yeah. Hey, here's an example where I could be patient and be okay with it, unlike Penix, where, hey, 1 year from now, which isn't that far away, one of those Niners receivers leave, and he's right there in the mix. And I think he'll have some games this year where he can still help you as a fantasy owner. You know, we know Debo disappears. We know Debo gets injured. Ayuk, as great of a stud as he is, I mean, that Niners offense is really matchup specific. So, but he's a talented kid that I love in the middle of the second round there. I'll hop on him if he's there for me.
Mitch?
Yeah, I agree. he's someone you're going to have to be patient with. The issue is his value is going to drop throughout the season if the 49ers don't move off somebody. But it's still, I say it's going to drop a lot. He's never going to be worth a 25 third, right? He might be worth like a 25 late second. He's already going for a 25 mid second. So the only issue is you're not going to see the hope for the gaining value you could talk yourself into any other second round pick, right? You could talk yourself into, hey, this guy's going to have this chance. Really, the only way Ricky Pearsall does is if we see a significant injury. And then he still has to, it's not just Debo Samuel gets injured. You're probably going to have to see a couple of them because you're still going to have Kittle there. You're going to have Ayuk there. You're going to have McCaffrey who's going to catch another 85 balls this year. So for him to really take off and to gain value in his rookie year, it's going to be really hard. So he's someone you're going to have to be super patient with. But I agree, 1 year from now, he could be in a great spot. You're like, all of a sudden, he looks fantastic. It's just you have to be willing to wait for that.
Dan, some of these middle round running backs, how do you value these guys? Blake Corum, Marshawn Lloyd, Jalen Wright.
I think I've already tipped my hat there with Marshawn Lloyd. I think he's just one of three backs in this class that you want to have if you're looking to bolster your running back. Again, might have to be a little bit patient in year one because of Jacobs there and Green Bay, but I think Lloyd's the real deal. And I think and you got Dylan there too, which kind of muddies it a little bit, you know. But I think talent rises to the top and that'll flesh out. The other two guys, man, I'm a little higher on the receivers in that round than the running backs. Like, Corum does everything well. He's tough. I'm still a Kyren Williams believer. You know, I'm thinking, you know, will they want to use Corum inside the red zone as a goal line back? Maybe, you know, or at least sometimes. But I wasn't really high on Corum or Wright going into the draft. Wright, I mean, again, I could make a case for these guys. If they fall to me, I will take either of them because best case scenario, Kyren gets hurt, which we know he can. If McVay likes his guy in Blake Corum, he's a tough dude. He's a good running back. So I do see a path for him. Same thing with Jalen Wright. We see what Mostert does. We see with A-Chain does in certain scenarios. He is a fast dude. You know, so there are scenarios where in that offense, he may have a game. But I just not really high on the running back overall themselves becoming like a feature back. So isn't that what we kind of hope in Dynasty? You get that running back and he becomes a feature back and then you're set at the running back position. So they're a little more risky than past running backs and past drafts, JB.
I mean, if Mostert goes down in Miami, I think we're going to see a big spike in value in Jalen Wright because they've shown they can have a couple productive running backs in that offense. Devon Achane, he can have those big splash plays. Jalen Wright can be involved, you know, so I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But if Raheem Mostert stays healthy and Jalen Wright doesn't see the field early, I certainly think that we could see that value come down a little bit. And then, you know, we talk about Blake Corum, him and Kyren Williams do a lot of similar things. So that could be a very nice 1-2 punch in an offense that really catered to Kyren Williams' strengths, I think.
I think with you guys broke down those three running backs really well. I think of all the rest of them, I'm getting Audric Estime a lot just because he's available in the late fourth in a lot of leagues. So I'm getting him. And really just because Peyton has shown he could make almost any running back look really good. I mean, look like Jaleel McLaughlin last year, right? He comes in, all of a sudden he looks like he could be a fantasy producer, but Peyton has kind of always done that with running backs. He's always been really good in that way. But really, the running back that I'm so far have the most shares of is Ray Davis. And it's really because if anything happens to Cook in Buffalo, Ray Davis is in such a good spot. And you look at what they've done over there. They've continued to try to add to that running back room every single year. But the players outside of Cook they get just haven't been very good. And so now maybe they just got the guy they're willing to have as a very strong backup who brings in a different skill set. And maybe if something happens, then all of a sudden Ray Davis can get a few more rushing yards, you know, a little bit more work that way. And you're getting him in the late third, early fourth. And I really like that value there compared to like a Bucky Irving.
Yeah, Ray Davis, he has one of the widest range of outcomes here in rookie draft so far. He is gone as early as pick 23, mm-hmm. as late as pick 44. So the guy's going in the third round, according to the ADP from these 25 drafts. Ray Davis, 21 spot gap. Kamani Vidal, 19. Jalen McMillan, 19. Jatavion Sanders, 18. Troy Franklin, 17. So again, like those guys make sense in there. Ray Davis, a lot of people liked him pre-draft. He gets a spot where he really could have production if Cook were to go down. Vidal, he goes to an interesting spot where you have Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. McMillan, he gets the third round draft capital in the NFL. If anything were to happen to Mike Evans or Chris Godwin, I think he could really find himself in a nice role there on a weekly basis. Jatavion Sanders, we talked about him. Troy Franklin, we talked about him. Like, all those guys make sense.
And you left out my boy Tyrone Tracy with the Giants out of Purdue, another converted guy from receiver to running back. I think, boy, Devin Singletary, I mean, it may be the same breath as Cook, but we know Cook's better than Singletary. I think there's opportunity there. And I think that's my thing with Corman, right, too, is, again, I could see a path where, boy, it'd be nice to have either one of them. But I'd rather be a little more aggressive getting the Ricky Pearsals and the Roman Wilsons and the Malachi Corleys in that second round, Mitch's boy Jalen Polk late, and then just, you know, if Lloyd slides, or if I'll just settle for Tracy or Davis a little bit later and still have a running back with upside.
I see B Ford's comment jumping the gun here. I'll get to that in a second before we wrap up the show. Fourth round range of outcomes, Brennan Rice, 28 spots. Cade Stover, 27. Isaac Arendo, 26. Braylon Allen, 23. I'm not going to have any Braylon Allen.
No, I think I have one, and it was like one of the very first drafts. I wasn't sure where he was going, but yeah, I'm not touching him.
And then Theo Johnson, 22 spots.
He's my dude late in the fourth round. I love Theo Johnson.
Well, we talk about situations where it's questionable. Is there a more questionable tight end situation than the New York Giants? Is Darren Waller going to retire? Daniel Bellinger and Theo Johnson really could have a nice battle there and provide a solid 1-2 punch. Garendo, I think we talk about contingent value. If CMC were to miss any time, who's to say Isaac Garendo wouldn't be the one to get thrust into an opportunity? Cade Stover, he's got Dalton Schultz to work with there. Maybe we don't get anything in year one, but if he shows enough, who knows what happens with Dalton Schultz beyond 24. And Brendan Rice, well, as much as Dan loves the legacy guys, this has Dan LaMagna written all over him.
There's still talent there in Brendan Rice. All right. Very hard runners, like the Isaiah Pacheco wide receiver. You know, his game still needs some polishing, but with Jerry Rice genes and work ethic, I think he could overcome and produce. And he goes to a nice situation in Los Angeles. You know, there's opportunity to compete.
And he was a seventh round draft pick, and we know how successful those guys have been. Seventh round wide receivers. It's quite the list, at least going back over the last 7-8 years. So the comment here, where are we seeing like a drastic tier break? And not only from the guys that you're looking to draft, but like, hey, I'm looking to move back. Well, you're in a certain spot that people aren't really interested in moving up or moving into the draft. Mitch?
So the late first is a huge one. And then the late second, just like Brian brought up, is another huge one. But I will say the early third, people are really willing to move up there. I think people see that late second value and no one is really willing to pay it, but they're willing to trade up to that early third to get whoever dropped that they like at that point. I've seen a lot of trades go for that range.
Agree.
Something I'm looking at in my drafts, if we're in the latish third and, you know, 308, 309 range, and I have my guys that the nobody slipped from my previous tier. You know, I've done something involving like 225 thirds. If you have a late second, I had one where I moved for a 25 second and a mid third. So there's a very good chance somebody moved up into that late second for a player that wasn't even on my radar, and I can't remember exactly what happened there. But then there's also a chance that a player that I would have taken at that 212 or whatever it was is available at 307, 308. So I think there are opportunities available. Dan, you have a 25 first. You have a team that you like, all right? Where are you willing to move into the draft? Because that's a big point for people. Where do I make this move? Do I trade in? Do I trade out? Where's that break for you?
Yeah, as you mentioned, so it's a team that I like, and it's very often the case that I am contented in trading future picks. So this kind of trades right in my wheelhouse, and I'm willing to move next year's first, probably all the way through one, depending on the roster, 109, 110. I mean, if obviously I'd like to get 108 and above and better. But if I could get a starting quarterback in Bo Nix where I need one this year, or I can get a Brian Thomas who could be the number one receiver in Jacksonville. And again, I need to play that one extra player to help me contend and compete this year. I'm willing to move that future first next year because I'm banking that's going to be late. All right. It's going to be a late first because my team's going to be a contender.
We're not that far off, actually. I would take the first over, you know, assuming – like if I'm looking at your team and you make me an offer and I see like on paper, it looks like to be a contending team. I would take that your 25 first over 111, 112, 201. Again, if somebody in the tier above did not slip. Now, if there's a team that looks vulnerable, there's not a lot of depth. They're maybe one injury or two injuries away or just lackluster performances away from really jumping to be an early 25 first. Maybe I get into that 109, 110 range, but I think you get a little bit added. And for the most part, looking at trades that have been completed across the board, I've seen 111 or 112 for a 25 first plus a small piece. Now, Mitch, would you rather move your 25 first by itself, let's say, to get that 111, 112, 201, or would you rather add whatever is necessary if it gets you into that 107 or 108?
I'm adding. So, like, even today, I didn't move a 25 first, but I traded Jared Goff plus a small piece for the 106 so I could draft Drake May. It's just about being willing to go after the prospects that you like with the high side that you could buy into. So if at 111, if Xavier Worthy is still sitting there, maybe Ladd McConkey sitting there, and I'm like, you know what? I really like what they could do. Then I could talk myself into that 25 first for that pick. Well, I think the best move you can make is if you're on a rebuilding team and somehow you traded for a late first, you know, happens a lot. Contending team gives you their late pick. They end up winning the league. So you have like the 114 or the 116 in a 14 or 16 team leagues. Trading those picks for a future first, I did that just straight up. I traded the 116 for a 25 first. It's going to improve. I mean, odds are maybe it's the same, but the 116 this year is no different than the 116 next year. So there might be a chance to where that could be the 108 next year. And in a 16 team league, I'm willing to take that risk of missing out on whoever, you know, that pick would be this year. I don't remember who we traded up for, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm looking at my tiers, and just to give an overall view for, you know, a little snapshot, if it is what I see as a non-playoff 25 first, and it's a stronger likelihood, like that 107, 108, I would be looking to get something added, you know, though. And again, depending on the format, like it might need to be a solid plus. But I agree with Mitch. I think I'd be more inclined to add to get up into that tier than maybe do something for the 111 or 112. If it is a playoff first, or what I assume to be a playoff first, 111 to 201, that's where the pivot point is, I think, for me. We get to 204 to 208 if nobody has slipped. So if Michael Penix is already off the board, but maybe I'm in a league full of Dans and Mitches, then I wouldn't do this. But a random 25 second, and maybe you can get like 304, 305 added. I think that's a nice play, depending, because you could get somebody that could slip. And then we get to middle of the third. Can I get a future third and a 402, 403, 404? I think those are opportunities that are going to give you additional leverage. And you're not only, I think a lot of people could see it like, oh, you're just kicking the can on the pick one more year, but now you have that pick at your disposal that you could do something with during the season. Hey, Raheem Mostert's really been popping off still. I could use a running back. Maybe I can now use that 25 third to do something. Before we hit the final thoughts, very quickly, Mitch, at 104, 12-team Superflex, start 10, including two tight ends. Daniels and Bowers are available. Who are you going with?
It's Bowers. And it's really just the league setting. It's not like I like Bowers more or anything. It's just two tight end. I'm going to take the tight end because you can't trade for tight ends in those leagues.
Dan?
Yeah, as long as he has a quarterback, Bowers.
All right. Let's see this one. 12-team Superflex, start 10. Needed a quarterback badly, but didn't want to pass on neighbors at three. So I trade up from 112 to 106 to guarantee me either Daniels, May, or McCarthy. I like that. I would like to know what need to be added to the 112. Typically, it's going to be a solid piece, but if the price is right, I call me Bob Barker. I'm loving that one. Let's see. Just a comment here. While the top running backs this year are what they are, I do think that there were some potential player plus situation combos that could hit. So as darts, I'm throwing, you know.
This year's draft was awesome. Great year for darts.
So let me, this is the ADP of the top 48 guys from these drafts, just to give a very quick breakdown. Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Drake May, Brock Bowers, J.J. McCarthy, Rome Odunze, Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, Bo Nix, Jonathan Brooks at 112. 201, Ladd McConkey, Michael Penix, Trey Benson, Keon Coleman, Ricky Pearsall, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Leggett, Blake Corum, Ben Sinnott, Jalen Polk, Roman Wilson, Marshawn Lloyd, 301, Troy Franklin, Jermaine Burton, Jalen Wright, Malachi Corley, Jatavion Sanders, Javon Baker, Kamani Vidal, Ray Davis, Will Shipley, Bucky Irving, Jalen McMillan, Audric Estime, 401, Luke McCaffrey, Spencer Rattler, Braylon Allen, Eric Ull, Theo Johnson, Tyrone Tracy, Isaac Arendo, Devontez Walker, Brendan Rice, Malik Washington, Jordan Travis sneaking in there at 411, and then Cade Stover at 412. Are there any guys that I did not mention there that interest you guys as a late round dart?
For everyone that is listening at 2x speed, you probably heard like 2.5 of those names. But no, I think we're good.
You cover the best sleepers.
I'm going to throw in Rasheen Ali going to Baltimore. I've scooped up a few shares very late in the fourth. And a free agent guy, and we talked about this on the guest spot we did, Dan, Bub Means. I'm getting him for $0 if I have a roster spot after the draft. Probably amounts to nothing, but gotta stick with my pick guy. Oh man, I need a breath after that right there.
Final thoughts.
Guys, you're lucky I'm letting you off the hook only 1 hour and 4 minutes of this week, because I could have gone all day.
Oh, we know. We know.
Dan, for the 243rd time, talking about 2024 rookie drafts, the first wave that are underway and getting wrapped up before the second wave that starts tomorrow. What do you got for our listeners?
Man, this is why I know, Mitch, that JB didn't want any small talk at the beginning of the show, because he wanted to get every ounce of data in those spreadsheets into the show that he could. And it was a fun one, JB. For our listeners, just some diverse thoughts, because I love this final thought segment, man. Don't neglect the McCaffreys and Rices late in your draft, man. Those big-gen players, you got to get them. Go New York Rangers, all right, next round of the playoffs. And for our techies out there, new iPad Tuesday, keep an eye out. And, Mitch, good luck with Mrs. Sorensen after the show.
Hey, I appreciate it. I'm just going to do a quick rant. What is it with so many people not showing up to the rookie drafts this
timing
year?
Timing out galore.
Like, every once in a while, you'll have, like, a league that it happens. There have been so many leagues to where, like, they've just had to stop the draft because people aren't showing up for it. It is insane this year. Okay, that's all I got.
Yeah, show up to your draft. And, like,
it's not asking for a lot. I mean, it's why we play Dynasty for rookie drafts.
Like, you know it's going on. Just show up. Anyway, I'm gonna spit this episode out on the podcast feed. Hopefully everybody gets a chance to listen to it before the drafts kick off tomorrow. For Mitch Sorensen, Dan LaMagna, I'm John Bauer. Have a great day.